Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, let's just get our breath back. I'm sat here in the paddock at Alton Park in Cheshire. It's a rather hazy but warm, but quite sticky Sunday afternoon, and I'm joined by my good friend and BSB colleague, and I can officially say now, BSB colleague, Dave Neil. Dave, first of all, welcome to Full Throttle. It's nice to have you on our podcast, having been on your off-track podcast earlier this year.
Thank you, Greg. Yeah, it's nice to be invited along. Thank you very much. After quite a hectic weekend, I think. Maybe not as hectic as yours with the commentary, but we've got a few bits and pieces for off-track coming up, and it's nice to be in the paddock kind of full-time now, yeah?
Well, you are, aren't you? And I'd like to very much talk about that, because Dave has been around the BSB paddock in particular now for many a year. I think of your 63 years, you've been in the paddock for how many of them? I'm only joking there, of course. But no, I'm really interested to know, because you're now working officially, aren't you? And congratulations on the role again, Dave, with Rich Energy and with the OMG team as well here in the paddock. What has it been like then? Because this has been officially your first race weekend working as a motorsport professional. Has it been as you expected?
It has, to be fair. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. It's been a long time coming. I've worked in the paddock. I say working in inverted commas, really. I've done some work with Jordan Weaving in the past when he was British champion in 2014 in Motostar. And then he moved on to Russo Racing at the time, 2015 Stock 600. Mm. And also with Josh Elliott from 2015 when he was Stock 1000 champion. And up to the end of 2019 when he and unfortunately OMG Racing parted company. So yeah, we've been doing a little bit across the years and just having a toe in the water and a little knock on the door now and again. And finally, the guys at Rich Energy, I've worked with them for the last couple of years, helping out with long form articles, a little bit of social media with them. We resurrected the podcast after a few years on Motopod, which I started in 2013 with the guys there. And we've got back on the podcast trail, which you have delighted me with your presence earlier in the year.
Kind of you to lie like that. No, it's nice to get you on this show as well. This is Full Throttle, of course. It is Monday as this one goes out. We'll have another one next week recorded at Donington World Superbikes. Another one the Monday after that recorded from Knockhill British Superbikes. It's a really, really busy time now. We're almost in July already, aren't we, as we record this?
If you need a hand at Donington next week, I am cheap and available.
Absolutely. Okay. No, okay. I'll see you there at Donington as well then. I thought we were going to get out of that one. We're going to be there as well. No, but we will be hearing it a bit from Jason O'Halloran, who of course has done not the double, but the treble. What a start for the man from New South Wales and the McCams Yamaha team. I have to say, I'm a neutral, but I am absolutely made up for them. We'll also be hearing from James Hayden in a while, a magic moment about the foggy Petronas Yamaha, which in his words was the bike that tried to kill him. I'm looking forward to hearing what James has got to say about that and all his spoils of 2003. But this is Full Throttle and Dave Neil's with us. Dave, BSB 2021. Let's just talk a bit about the fact we're back, first of all, because it's been a horrible time, hasn't it, in life in general. And I think the fact that we're back in the paddock and there is some kind of normality in the air now is a blessed relief more than anything for everybody else. And it's just been so nice to see people we know, the social distancing in place. We're still wearing face masks. It's not quite normal, but we're getting there, aren't we? And I think it's absolutely vital for the whole motorcycle racing community because it's been a torrid time.
It has. It's been wonderful to see the fans back in Alton Park this weekend. 4,000 fans a day across the weekend. They've really added to the spectacle across what has been the opening round of the British Superbike Championship. and enjoying seeing them out. We've been lucky enough to be out onto the banking to watch a few races over today. And it's nice, everybody. They are socially distanced. They are. I took a video of that and posted it on the Rich Energy site yesterday, during just before Superbike Race 1. And to look back and to see everybody along from the first corner down to Cascades, everybody enjoying it, everybody looking happy. It's as close to normal as we've been, especially after last year's shortened season. We were short on spectators then. There were an awful lot more regulations in place, and the racing has been fantastic across all the classes. And as you say, Jason O'Halloran, he's pulled out an absolute masterclass today on his McCams Yamaha, and I really feel for Christian Idden, because I don't think he could have done any more to become a BSB race winner in 2021. But to be effectively mugged three times, Jason had the upper hand on him to this weekend.
He did, but what a great start for Christian Idden as well. Of course, we had him on the Eurosport show in the studio, didn't we, recently for Misano World Superbikes, and he did a brilliant job there. He's done a brilliant job here at Alton Park as well. Jason O'Halloran, though, was the one who won the race. But I think you're absolutely right. It's only fair we hear from the pair of them. Of course, Matt and Rachel have been very, very busy in the paddock all weekend. So let's have a listen in to Jason O'Halloran and Christian Idden. Definitely the two top BSB riders this weekend.
Let's get Christian Idden now then in after 3 second places, which probably before the start of the season, Christian, you would have taken, wouldn't you?
Yeah. But to be that close is upsetting. But I want a new point system where you get a point for every lap you lead, because we do be doing all right. That's a good confidence booster for me to lead races like that. I knew it was Jason behind. I knew we had good pace, and I actually tried to push the pace on in the middle. I knew if I could do high 34s, then we probably could break whoever was coming with us. And I put a few real good heaters in, and then I lost the front at turn one and lost a second on what I was doing, and then that upset my rhythm a little bit, and I dropped into the 35-1s, 35-2s, and it sort of unsettled me. And I'd used up a little bit of tyre trying to push that pace on. I wanted to either try and break Jason or at least break the rest of the group. And losing the front there, it was a big enough moment. It didn't look too much probably on the TV, but to me it was like I was nearly down. Saved it, and I wasn't going to let him pass me into the last corner. I was either going down or going to keep the win, but he done me somewhere else. So is what it is. So I think. I think we can be happy that we've done a good job this weekend. You know, Jason and his bike have been fantastic all weekend, and from the first practice, they've had probably superior pace. So actually, to have come that close to beating him all three races is pretty good. So we can be happy with that. So yeah, great job. My bike was really nice to ride. I enjoyed it. It's been a good weekend. Happy days.
Good man. Well done, Christian.
Cheers.
See you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
But for now, at least, the man who's going to be going to knock it with the biggest smile of all will be Jason O'Halloran. Jason, I just mentioned there, you've just about doubled your BSB career tally for wins this weekend. What a perfect weekend. How do you begin to sum it up?
Speechless. I knew coming into the weekend that we're strong. We topped the test here. We're really strong at Donington, all the tests, to be honest, all pre-season. We've done really good work with the bike, and we're just tweaking little bits and pieces now, and I just feel at one with the bike. And when I'm with these guys, everyone's got their strong points and weak points, but I'm just managed to get the last little bit out of the Yamaha and get the wins. So I'll take them while they're coming. They're not easy to get. I've been working a long time to get them. This weekend started perfect for the championship for us, 15 podium credits, roll on the next round.
Just tell us about your strategy on the final lap there. Christian, I think, was probably preparing for a final corner move. Is that what you had in mind when you did it early, Ireland?
To be honest, I knew I wouldn't probably pull that pass off again, because Christian was strong on the brake there and he knew that I might have a go. I was sort of lining him up for Shell and sort of I was hoping to let him think that's where I was going to pass him, because I had a few goes, and then I just pulled at a corner early and caught him by surprise, because no one's been passing there. It's a momentum pass, a little bit easier than doing it on the brake, just chuffed a bit through the weekend. So.
Well, it was a perfect move and a perfect weekend for you, Jason. Well done. Congrats once again.
Massive thanks to everyone at McCams Yamaha and all my personal sponsors. Thanks very much.
Yeah, two pretty happy guys, it's fair to say. Do you know what I love about those two. And to be fair, almost all the riders in this paddock, everybody's so honest, aren't they?
Yes.
Whether they had a good day. I thought Josh Brooks's honesty on the grid walk with Witt earlier in the weekend when he said, you know, I just need to get a few things together. Josh Brooks is one of the most honest of the lot, I would say, actually. But that's so refreshing because we don't see that in all sport now, do we? There's a lot of lying and mind games that goes on. I know there's mind games here in the paddock as well, but real honesty, and I think that's really wonderful, don't you?
I do, and that's something you have to work out what's going on as well sometimes. I really enjoy the human side of motorcycle racing. Yeah. I enjoy trying to understand and work out, well, okay, racers a lot find it hard to show weakness. Yeah. And it or to show a chink in the armor, but sometimes you just have a bad day, and sometimes you just got to come out with it and say, do you know what, it was me, it's been one of those days, can't get my head right, but we go again at Knockhill in a couple of weeks time.
Yeah.
One thing I am impressed with again this weekend as well, Taran McKenzie, as we go on to the results of the weekend, for a track that he has been not his strong, I won't say weak because that's not a fair word, but that isn't his strongest of tracks. And he openly admits that. To see him pull off the results he has this weekend has really kick-started his championship, because coming here to start a championship at his weakest track can't have been an easy pill to swallow. But bringing back the results he has, I think, has been really impressive from Taran.
He was really honest as well, actually. I was in the McCams Yamaha hospitality unit earlier on today, and Neil McKenzie was there interviewing Taz and Jason O'Halloran in front of several corporate guests. That's been great as well, to have a limited number of fans, as you said before, 4,000, Dave, across the weekend here at Alton Park. But it was great, wasn't it, to see them all in the hospitality. And Taz did say, though, this morning, not all 4,000 were in the hospitality, by the way. Let's clear that up.
It's a big hospitality unit, but it's not that big.
It is indeed. In fact, the fans generally weren't allowed into the paddock, were they, this weekend?
No, unfortunately not.
Still a bit strange from that point of view. And we do miss you, and we're very much hoping you're back soon. I'm just glad the racing's back, but it's not the same without the fans. And all the riders have been saying the same, although they have been saying it's great to see people, you know, cheering on the grass banking, and in the grandstand at Lodge Corner as well. But yeah, just back to Taz Mack earlier on. He was saying to his dad in that interview that, you know, this isn't really my best circuit. And he is one of the smaller and lighter riders. It's a very, very physically demanding track, isn't it? As Scott Redding found out here back in 2019. So at the time I was thinking, oh, it's almost as though he's given up before he started. But I don't think it is that. He's just accepting the fact that he knows it's not his best track. But at the same time, he's also thinking, well, Jason's doing a brilliant job. You know, it's not the bike, it's me. But in a way, I think Taz has taken that as a positive, hasn't he?
I think so too. And if you think ahead as well, not only are we starting the season here, we also start the showdown here as well when we come to middle of September.
Yes. Good point.
So to make the positive this weekend will stand him in good stead for when the showdown kicks in the middle of September, that he already has the confidence inside him, knowing he's had such a positive weekend to start the year.
Now, obviously, I'm sure most of you listening to this, and I guess it's the same with your podcast, Dave, have already watched the races. So we're not just going to sit here today and talk about what's already been discussed on the TV, but let's quickly talk about Josh Brooks. From a neutral point of view, I always think it's quite interesting when the reigning champion starts the season with a bit of a struggle. I said exactly the same thing with Jonathan Rea in World Superbikes last year when he had the crash in Australia. Not because you wish misfortune on anyone, but because it gives them that, you know, momentum, or what I can say, the motivation, let's say, to catch up. And it just opens up the championship a bit, doesn't it? You could see him, though, gaining ground, couldn't you, as the weekend went on. It just feels almost as though, I don't know whether it's the X compound tyre, because we've seen that, haven't we, for the first time. And I think more than Josh Brooks, it's the fact that Ducati, and this is me speculating here, so I could well be wrong, the Ducati's got a very, very, very narrow window for setup, hasn't it? And we've seen this recently with Scott Redding on the world stage as well. So if it's not quite right, if it's just a little bit out, you're going to feel it, aren't you? Because that's Josh Brooks on the bike, so we know what he's capable of.
It's the bike he rode last year. It's
exactly.
The same team. He has the continuity, which is something for the championship. Five or six of the championship contenders are all on the same motorcycle that they were last year.
Yeah.
So that, for me, is an unprecedented season as well for the way that things work. But for Josh, I think it will. It's an unusual one because you do expect him to be at the front here. You do expect him to be on the podium at Alton Park. He proved that last year, that he's very strong around this circuit. But with the results that he's had this weekend that aren't quite up to scratch, you also don't get the point with, well, Brooks is winning again. Mm. It's only going to be Brooksy. You know, he's won a hatful of races around Alton Park. The undulating roller coaster of a circuit nestled in leafy Cheshire, which seems to be the start of every press release from the circuit. To have him not at the front, and we've still got 30 races left, it just gives him that little bit of a chance to catch up. It gives the others a head start. And everybody's going to have a bad weekend. It's the nature of British Superbikes. But if a bad weekend is finishing mid-top 10, then some of the boys will take it. It's still three races. It's still three finishes. And away we go.
I always think our instinctive reaction is a good way to judge things in a way. Because when your gut tells you, what's going on with Josh Brooks? It shows you how great the man is in normal circumstances, doesn't it? Just like Jonathan Rea, just like if Marquez has had struggles in the past, we know he'll be back, don't we? But
absolutely.
I think from a neutral point of view, I think it's great because we're going to see a real championship fight now. He's going to have all the reasons to be as aggressive as ever when they get to Knock Hill. Others will struggle, I guess, at Knock Hill. I have to say, let's talk quickly about BMW, because Xavi Forrest, first of all, had a big high side here in practice on Friday in the wet. I did speak with him on Saturday, and he said he's flying back to Spain. So by the time you all listen to this, he will be back in Spain, and they're going to make a decision as to whether they need to operate or not. But best wishes to Xavi Forrest. But his teammate, Peter Hickman, everyone said this, haven't they, about the winglets on the new M1000RR. He was catching up for the lead in race two earlier on Sunday. I mean, at one point, I thought FHO are going to win this on their first weekend under the FHO banner.
And what a prize
it's
that would have been.
Incredible.
What a prize that would have been for the FHO BMW team. Seriously. Peter Hickman's really impressed me this weekend. It's a circuit he enjoys. He went well here in his GB Moto days alongside Leon Haslam. He's not shy on two wheels, is Hickey. And he's trimmed down a lot as well. He's a lot sleeker.
Hasn't he lost a full stone or something like that?
At least. Yeah. And he's as sleek as I think I've ever seen Hickey and as hungry as I've ever seen Hickey. So for him to return the results he has this weekend on the new M1000RR BMW is a real shot in the arm for him as well. There are some circuits coming up that he might not be quite as quick on, but he's thrown his hat into the ring straight away, and he certainly hasn't looked out of place at all.
You know who else I think has had a really impressive weekend? And I'm not surprised, but in a way I am, because, you know, to jump up from a supersport bike to a superbike and do what he's done, Rory Skinner. I mean, some really superb. We don't have the results in front of us. As you can tell, we're recording off the cuff just after everything's gone off air on Eurosport. And Dave's finished his work as well. But he's been up there in the top 10 all weekend long, hasn't he? And pushing, you know, seasoned professionals in the British Superbike Championship with that new very, very, very green FS3 Kawasaki. And
that's green in capital
letters.
The
jury's out on that one. Do you like it?
It's distinctive.
From a TV point of view, I think it's great, personally.
It's not factory Kawasaki green.
No,
even though they are the factory team, but it is a very fluoro green. You certainly can't miss
it. It's Ghostbusters slime green.
And Lee Jackson, Rory's teammate, has a real bright orange helmet as well. So the boys at FS3 race, they are very distinctive.
I can't remember who it was actually, but when that livery came out a few weeks ago, somebody said to me, it looks a bit like a duck because it's got like an orange beak around the air intake on the front, doesn't it?
Absolutely no comment on that.
I like ducks anyway.
Yeah, me too. All ducks matter.
I don't think we'd be talking about ducks on this, but that's the joy of podcasting, isn't it?
It is.
But let's be serious for a moment. That air intake on that Kawasaki.
Yes.
Now, that's the same one, of course, that's at World Superbikes as well.
Indeed.
And we know how good that is through fast sweeping corners. And we know how we do have some quick, fast sweepers here at Alton, such as the double right-hander at Druids, which is, I guess, just a few hundred metres behind us from where we're sat in the paddock here. But no, I thought you did really well, don't you? And maybe not so much the riding, but the coping with the pressure side. Because he was dealt a really bad hand, wasn't he, with what happened in the British Talent Cup. And he's had to go through mentally a tough time over the last few years. But I know for a fact that that team are delighted with what he's done. And I think Lee Jackson's a really decent peddler as well.
He is. And so Lee's shouldering the burden, if you like, of the development work for the Kawasaki with the team as Rory gets his novice season. That's the wrong word. His rookie season underway.
Yeah.
And I've been really impressed with him this weekend, the same as you have. It's not an easy place to come for a rookie, and especially not on a I don't even know what they are these days, 220, 230 brake horsepower superbike, trying to tame that around the ups and the downs, the, as you say, the fast turns like Island and Druids, to the tight turn in Shell and the chicanes as well. It keeps your attention all the way around the lap. And I was watching the third race this afternoon out at Druids. So as they come through the double right-hander, they go over the first roller.
Yeah.
And he was fighting it through there. I mean, on a super sport bike, it's not so bad. You can lean the weight forward, keep it pinned, and away you go. But with that little bit of extra weight and an awful lot more power, I think he's shown himself really well this weekend.
Have you seen this picture, by the way? I don't know whether it's been posted on social media yet. I'm just showing Dave a picture on my phone.
That's here. Tommy Bridewell's rear sprocket.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know whether this has been posted. James Hayden sent this to a WhatsApp group we have at Eurosport.
It has been posted. Yeah, Wilf Moore's posted that. He said, thank you for the front wheel bobbing.
Right, so maybe in that case it was Wilf Moore who took the picture then. It probably was. But it says, go online, everyone, and have a look, because it's pretty spectacular. If you tried to do this a million times, you never would do it. This is the front wheel spindle protector from Taran McKenzie's bike that wedged in Tommy's sprocket and ripped off his chain. Now, we saw that in the first of the Sunday races here, race two or three of the weekend. Isn't it funny how things like that happen sometimes and how your race can end in the strangest of ways?
Absolutely. But how close do you want your racing?
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Actually, it was, they were quite processional races, weren't they, I thought, this weekend. And that's not a criticism. I think that shows how high the level is and just how difficult it can be to pass. But we've become so accustomed to processional races in world superbikes in the last few years, which I'm pleased to say is not the case now, and quite the opposite in BSB. This was a more processional affair for BSB, wasn't it?
I think it was a little bit when you look at the front two boys for the three races. But I think what it also showed was a really calculated set of three races from Jason.
Yes,
he didn't want to show his hand too early.
No, really
unfortunately,
really
Tommy
good.
Bridewell couldn't get involved amongst it and start fiddling with the front two and getting in the way and slowing the pace down. And neither could Taz later on. So it was difficult, and they dropped Peter Hickman as well in the later stages. So it was up to the rest of the guys to keep up. But the pace that those two showed so late in the race, and for Jason to put in the fastest lap in one race on the penultimate lap, showed that that Jason O'Halloran and Christian Idden this weekend, they were the cream of the crop. And it is a difficult place to overtake, but the respect that those two have between them, I think was there in abundance this weekend. But further down the field, there were some really good battles. But yes, it is difficult to overtake at Alton Park on a superbike at times.
For sure. But in a way, that's what I like, though. I don't think that wasn't a criticism, by the way, that
no,
I said
not
they're
at
processional
all.
Races. I don't think it should be easy to overtake in top class motorcycle racing or motor racing in general, do you? Formula One's the same. I think sometimes with DRS now in F1, in my opinion, having watched it and been a fan all my life, it's maybe
F1.
A little bit...
What's that?
Exactly. Ron Haslam. You know Ron Haslam, don't you? The F1...
He was TTF1 world champion.
Absolutely. But no, obviously I'm talking about Formula One car racing in real now. But yeah, sometimes I think with DRS, it's too easy to overtake. It never has been easy to overtake in Formula One or... 500cc Grand Prix, there's a lot of it, but it's not easy. And I think sometimes when you have a processional race, it actually shows how great a job they're doing in the races that are action-packed.
If it was easy to overtake, we'd all be doing it.
It wouldn't mean anything, would it?
No.
It wouldn't mean anything.
And how do you build racecraft as a racer if your overtakes are really easy? You learn by making mistakes. You learn by going in too deep, by tucking the front, as we've seen numerous times at Lodge Corner over the years and over the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, that late lunge, it just sometimes doesn't work. And the only time you can learn is by picking gravel out of your boots and thinking, right, well, I'm not going to do that again. And I think it was it race two where Jason, he was skitterish, I think was a fair word, going into Lodge to put the pass on Christian, but it was clean. And the third race, he passed him a little bit further back in the lap at Island Bend, which, at whatever it is through there, 140, 150 mile an hour, something
that
like
was
that.
Amazing to watch.
Not many passes happen there.
No.
So, you know, kudos to both of them for safe bravery.
But
is that such a thing?
Safe bravery.
Do we have safe bravery?
Yeah, I think you probably can. Yeah, because you could be brave and stupid. So safe, brave. I like that.
We haven't seen much of that this weekend, either.
We haven't, actually. No, we haven't in any of the categories.
No.
And I have to say, I don't know what you saw of the junior superstock class, as it's now known. Of course, Stock 1000, as it was, is now the National Superstock Championship. Stock 600, now known as the Junior Superstock Championship. I quite like those names, I have to be honest, because you've got now British Supersport and Junior Supersport. British National Superstock and Junior Superstock. It makes sense because in the World Championship we have Supersport 300, which is now a ridiculous name because none of the bikes are 300. So to call it Junior Supersport makes much more sense, doesn't it, really?
Let's absolutely it does.
But anyway, the reason I'm talking about that is because in National Superstock today and yesterday, so Saturday and Sunday, Jack Nixon, absolutely consummate racecraft, the way he, okay, you might say he got a bit lucky in the Saturday race when the other two pushed each other wide, but he was there.
That's
he
racing.
Read it exactly. He read it perfectly and dived through on both of them. So he put himself in the right place to take advantage because he knew it was coming. And then today's race, he just picked them off one by one by one. And I was talking about it with Tristan Finocchiaro in the commentary today, Dave, and we're about four or five laps from home. And I said, I've just got this feeling about Nick. So I'm showing off now because I don't always get it right.
Waiting to hear my reply.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But no, I just had a funny feeling. I guess it's because he'd won on the Saturday as well. But you could just see he was sitting and surveying the situation. So we knew where everyone was stronger and weaker. And he picked them all off one by one. What's your reply?
My reply is,
Gregory, you idiot.
No, Gregory, I knew that was going to happen as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, smart ass.
No, he was on the technical side with Triumph.
Scott Smart, yeah. I was having a chat. Sorry, I had a mind blank now. I was having a chat with Scott Smart. He was here today, actually.
Yes, he was. That's why I said
Yeah, okay, carry on.
I was...
1-0.
Yeah, oh, there you see. This is all good fun,
We're
isn't
only,
it?
We're only 25 minutes into this podcast.
I know, it's great, isn't it? I love it. I'm actually really enjoying this.
Me too, actually.
It's actually really good fun to actually... Let's just go slightly off track here.
Yeah, let's do so. See what you did there.
Thank you. It's nice. Yeah,
can I just remind everyone that I want to be honest about this. Dave does a great podcast. It is called Off Track. I'm not just saying that because he's with us. What I like about you, Dave, and there'll be people thinking now, he's just crazy, his friend. But no, but Dave does a podcast called Off Track. Have a look on your favourite podcast suppliers after you've listened to Full Throttle, then listen to Off Track. But no, I like that you do have really relaxed chats with people, and when they're out of the circuit. And I know one of the things you do, which I have to admit I should start doing this because it works better if the internet connection's good. You normally do video calls with people, don't you? Even though it's just an audio-based podcast. It's not a vodcast. But it's so much better because you can tell, when you can see people and the mannerisms, it comes across much better, doesn't it?
Many, many moons ago when I was working on Motopod and, you know, did I have you on Motopod? I don't think I did. I think we knew each other then.
No, but I don't think so.
Steve Days was on there a couple of times. Neil Hodgson was on there. Freddie Spencer. Let's just really drop some real big clangs
for
the names.
I should listen back to me. I'd like to get to know these
Jorge
people.
Lorenzo, Andrea Dovizioso, Danny Kent.
And with the greatest of respect, not a small podcast in the racing world, but it's a relatively small podcast in relation to some of the podcasts we have out there now. How did you get people like Jorge Lorenzo on your podcast? Because I'm sure there'll be a lot of budding bloggers and journalists and so on listening to this. You know, how did you do it?
That wasn't down to me. That was down to a gentleman called Jim Race and one of my co-hosts on Motopod, Martin Darlington. And they had agreed with the Yamaha press officer that we could go down and have 5 minutes with Jorge Lorenzo. I wasn't working on the show at the time. And this is one of my favorite stories. The bottom line for what I do is I am a massive fan of the sport. And I have been since I was 5 years old at Cadwell Park with Barry Sheen, Mick Grant, Will Hartog, guys like that. I've grown up with motorcycle racing and I absolutely adore it. With the advent of social media and Twitter, we get to know a few people. That's how we got to know each other, by being polite to people on Twitter and engaging with them. And it's a very different platform these days. But we're going back to 2012, 2013. Mm. Going back to... in the MotoGP paddock 2013, I got the invite to go down because Martin couldn't make it. Martin was a massive Jorge Lorenzo fan. And I got the call after being recommended by a friend of ours in Leeds to join the podcast, who was a regular listener. So, well, Dave could do it. He's good at things like that. But this time I was still working shifts in a food packaging company. with a young daughter and a mortgage and the usual life restrictions. So I had the biggest opportunity I think I've ever had. And the first interview I ever did was in Yamaha Hospitality and 5 minutes with Jorge Lorenzo. So talk about going in at the deep end. I don't think I could have got any deeper.
You must have been so nervous.
I can't tell you, Greg. As I was holding my new dictaphone, making sure it was
shaking?
Still working, it was literally shaking.
Yeah.
But thankfully, Alberto Gomez, who was the Yamaha PR man at the time for Jorge Lorenzo, had spoken to him beforehand and said, look, it's his first time, he's nervous, kind of be good. And he was an absolute gentleman. And we spoke more after the interview than during it. And I showed him videos of Cadwell Park at Brooksy over the mountain and that kind of thing.
Had he not seen that before?
No. He had no idea where it was and what
so
the
what
bikes
were.
So
what was Jorge Lorenzo's reaction to seeing Josh Brooks on the mountain at Cadwell Park?
I think he swore in Spanish because I didn't know what he said.
Can you remember the word?
No.
I think I can probably imagine.
He
probably did.
But he just nodded and smiled. So I introduced Jorge Lorenzo to the mountain at Cadwell. But yeah, I'm rambling on a little bit. But that's how I got involved with Motopod, was through Twitter and getting to know guys like Ian Wheeler and Charlie Hiscott. Everybody loves Charlie Hiscott. He's gone from
Charlie. I love you, really.
He's a great guy, and they've all had a little bit of words of wisdom over the years. Tony Carter, when he was at Eurosport before he was replaced by Matt Roberts, who's done a fantastic job ever since. And it's just a really strange journey for a guy who's just a super. I am a BSB super fan.
So I do want to ask you what it's been like to have the transition of being in the paddock as a mega, mega, mega fan who knows loads of people, so actually being here on a professional basis. But before we do that, I'll give you a few seconds to think about what you're going to say. Let's go to that magic moment that we talked about before, because James Hayden, as we know, is a great friend of ours at Eurosport. He's a multiple British Championship race winner. But in 2003, he joined the all-new Foggy Patronus team. And they did have some decent results with people like Troy Corser in particular. But that first year was far from easy. And James has always described that bike as the bike that wanted to kill him. So here we go with this week's magic moment. I'm looking forward to hearing how James Hayden describes this one.
Hey, Greg, you wanted a story about the Patronus bike. Unfortunately, I don't really have any good ones. I mean, the thing was the worst machine I ever had the unfortunate luck to ride. I got a seventh in Japan. Was my best result, but actually it was just a pig of a thing. Obviously it used to catch on fire, so I was regularly jumping off it. It used to fill its airbox with oil and keep running perfectly somehow until it just started overflapping and going on the tire. And if you were lucky, your foot slipped off first and you knew, but if not, then suddenly you just find yourself flying through the air in one big crash. I give the third gear break up and lock me up in Germany and have a horrific crash. I mean, the thing was just awful. In the end, even looking at that colour, I mean, that turquoise now still just reminds me of pain and humiliation. So it wasn't a good time, but hey, it's all part of life's tapestry, isn't it? And actually the main thing is that I came out in one piece, which it would have been very easy not to do.
James Hayden is just great value, isn't it?
He is.
Did you hear him on the Eurosport show after Misano World Superbikes, when he described Victor Stamen, the Supersport 300 rider on the KTM, as the mad drummer from the Muppets, is it?
Animal.
Animal.
Animal was the mad drummer from the Muppets.
That's it, yeah. James is great. But that wasn't the easiest of times for James.
No, not at all.
He's laughing about it now. But I bet you remember those days quite clearly, don't you, with Foggy Patronus? There was a massive budget, wasn't there? I remember they did a massive documentary about the whole thing, the making of, and they made a... I think it was a clay model they made of the bike before.
That's right.
And remember?
Yes.
Which was quite ahead of its time, actually, back then. I remember Julian Ryder and Kel Edge and Gordon Ritchie and Keith Hewan and numerous, media personalities and stars being involved in a big launch they did. Obviously, Carl Fogarty himself was very much involved. But unfortunately for them, it was a good example of just how difficult it can be to do well in motorcycle racing and motorsport, I think, wasn't it?
It's a very difficult sport to get into, isn't it? It's an even more difficult sport to do very well in, because the bottomless pit of money becomes even greater.
Yeah.
The higher in the sport you go, and the more you want to close that gap. Mm. As I remember Julian Ryder saying, it's not particularly expensive to get within a second of the front guys, but to get to within a tenth of a second of the front guys is really expensive. That's where the proper money starts. So yeah, for the backing that they had through Petronas and Foggy as the figurehead for it, it had all the hallmarks of a successful outfit. As you say, Troy Corser was part of the team, Chris Walker, Craig Jones was one of the riders as well. It just unfortunately didn't happen the way that a lot of the fans wanted to, especially after Foggy finishing the sport early due to his shoulder injury at Phillip Island. It kind of left, as it can with a lot of riders, it kind of left him a little bit directionless, especially when it's not your choice to stop racing. So it was a project he could get his teeth into, but yeah, ultimately it didn't quite go the way that the British racing fans would have hoped.
It was funny, actually. I found a clip on YouTube not that long ago, a few years after that. James went to ride one of those Petronas bikes again, and it broke down. And he said, oh, well, it's just quite realistic, because that's what it always did at the time anyway.
It was a difficult project, wasn't it? It was a difficult project.
Go. I just saw in the distance Steve Rogers driving out of the circuit, Dave.
Indeed.
Steve really is a nice guy, isn't he? He's
absolutely
the team principal of the McCams team, for anyone who's not aware, and to have a treble, what a great start. It's a really nice team there, the Race Days team, which runs McCams Yamaha. I have to say, I'm really made up for them. And for Jason O'Halloran, because it was here at Alton Park, if you remember, back in 2019, when he had that really nasty and awkward injury, which pretty much wrecked the season, didn't it, that year?
It did. And probably one of the slowest crashes of his career.
Yeah, Hizzy Chicane, wasn't it?
Yes, it just a little slip on the mud in the pre-season test, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, yeah.
And
now, obviously, at the time, they kept it relatively quiet.
They did.
How bad it was, as
they
you
did.
Would, you're not going to expose any weakness.
As race teams do, and that,
yeah,
that such is their want, because it's the nature of the sport. That's what race teams do, and rightly so.
But that's some good payback, I think, though, for Jason, you know, to have done what he's done this weekend at Alton Park.
No question. He showed it last year. I think he's still riding the crest of confidence from last year, finishing runner-up in the championship to Josh Brooks. That really showed what Jason was about. He'd had two or three seasons where he'd, in air quotes, won testing. But unfortunately, yes, it didn't transfer because of the shoulder injury. Made things difficult for him and the McCams Yamaha team. He'd been incredibly loyal to Honda prior to that, and he is what genuinely one of the good guys in the paddock, no question.
Yeah.
And although a difficult Donington Park last season curtailed his championship charge, as Brooksy was imperious as the season came to a close, but this season, starting with a treble, and for Steve Rogers and the team and all involved at Raceways and McCams Yamaha, you can't ask for any more. And as we said earlier in the show, Taz McKenzie stepping up to the plate at a circuit that he's not the fondest of. I think it's going to be a really cheerful drive home for Steve and the team tonight.
Yeah, and if you end up listening to this, Steve, I don't know whether you do, congratulations personally as well, because I just think that's a very, very well-deserved weekend indeed, a very well-deserved result there. Okay, well, just before we heard from James Hayden a second ago, we were just about to talk about Dave Neal, and we're sat here laughing, but no, honestly, Dave, it's really great that I've seen a friend become a professional, and you are now a professional.
It does seem strange, Greg. It really does.
Just to sum up to us, What's your actual title now? What is it you actually do?
I am motorsport editor for Rich Energy. Rich Energy are looking to develop their online presence. They obviously cover quite a lot of motorsport these days. They're sponsors of Touring Car Squad, Power Max Racing, Jason Plato and Daniel Lloyd, as well as Creasy.
Yes.
Michael Creese, former British touring car driver who's now gone into the Porsche Super Cup. I was thinking of the Sears Trophy, former Sears Trophy winner in BTCC.
Now, the Porsche Super Cup there, just to interject, and apologies
no,
for that.
No, go on.
And that's actually talking about the actual Porsche Super Cup that runs alongside F1, isn't
indeed,
it?
Indeed, yeah.
So he was racing at Monaco recently.
He was indeed, and I think he's been out at the Nürburgring today.
Right,
our
okay.
PR man, Sam Walker, has been looking after that side of things today while I've been scouring the paddock for podcasts and ended up on and here with you.
Sam Walker's a good bloke as well,
he
isn't
is. He? Yeah.
And to be fair, most people in motorcycle racing are, and I think we've seen over the last year in particular, with the terrible time we've all had with the pandemic, how everyone's really stuck together. And I do think you get that more in bike racing. I certainly have seen that than in car racing. But there's some particularly good blokes, and Sam's just one of them, isn't he? Just a nice, normal, hardworking person. And in good company.
And the experience that he brings from Yamaha Europe and that he brings from SMR with his time in World Superbikes and prior to that here in the British Superbike paddock. It's good to have good people around. It makes the weekend even better. And having spent a lot of weekends on the fringe, knocking on doors and not feeling quite that I belong, because I still have a day job, and a lot of the guys in the paddock have a day job, but they're part of a team. And to now have that where I can be a part of a team, I have a role to do, I have a job to do, and we've done a little bit of work today for a YouTube video with the riders, so that's now a little bit of online TV presenting as well that I've got to learn to do.
Have you been on screen?
And yes, I have.
Oh,
yeah,
great, the video
will come out today, hopefully this evening, maybe if not tomorrow. We've had a couple of guys over from Northern Ireland who've been helping us out, called Off Brand. So we've been using Robbie and Cameron over the weekend to get us some footage in the garage to build the Rich brand as well. And you know, we want to do some more in motorsport. We want to get the word out there, and the opportunity came along for me to kind of run that side of things. And it's the strangest thing to be, as I'm sure you get this as well, being paid to follow your passion.
Yeah,
is just the most satisfying thing that you can have. And I'm 100%, I feel incredibly fortunate and very grateful to Alan Gardner and Alan Lowe and everybody at Rich Energy and the OMG Racing team as well to give me the chance to do it, because I never thought I would get the chance. I never thought I was able to do this at this level, because I didn't have the self-belief to do it. It's not going to turn into an introspective, but as a big fan who didn't really believe in himself too much, but with the encouragement of Jennifer, my girlfriend, and really good friends like you, Gregory, who really do, you know, pull me along. It's been the start of a long journey, I hope.
Oh, yeah, thank you for that, by the way. I'm keen to know, for anyone who's listening to this now, who's a mega, mega fan, like yourself, well, like me, we're all mega fans.
We're all
like
mega fans. Before, that's why we do what we do.
But, you know, a mega fan who's not actually working in the paddock on a professional basis at the moment, who wants to, having just started that yourself, what advice would you give them, in the sense that you're still a fanboy at heart, but obviously when you start working in the paddock, you have to have a certain level of professionalism, obviously, don't you?
A little less giddy.
As I like to think we have. I hope,
I think we do.
We do. But it's not always easy, is it? And I'll also just say this. I've seen people working in various organisations before, whether it's teams or the organisation running the championship or whatever. You know, I've worked at Dorna before, which, by the way, Dorna has some fantastic people in it. And like all organisations, it has its haters, but it also has a lot of people who respect it. But the reason I'm saying this is, I've seen people at Dorna, for example, in the past, who start working there in MotoGP, and then they end up, sadly, falling out of love with the sport. Depending on the job you're doing, some people are very much, you know, at the track like we now are. Some people are more backroom staff who might just be based, in their case, in Barcelona. Or let's just say if you're working for the FIA, for example, or the FIM, you might be in Switzerland or in France or wherever. But then they don't, you know, sometimes you have to understand why certain things happen in the sport. And sometimes there are commercial aspects. I think it's fair to say that overall, the sporting side, and you start then thinking, now I understand, you know. For example, on your Off Track podcast recently, there was an interview with Danny Kent.
Indeed.
He didn't get an entry at one point. Was it MotoGP or no? That was his own choice, wasn't it?
It was his own choice not to go to
Pramac. There was one of the classes, and you might be able to remind me now, that he didn't get an entry because Dorna at the time wanted a different nationality rider. And you've got to understand as well that, you know, they're trying to sell television rights. And they also make money off circuit hosting fees. So they want a nice spread of nationalities. You know, there was a block on British riders going into World Supers a few years ago, which A, is a reflection on how high the level is in the British Superbike Championship, but B, was also, you can understand it in a way. You can't have a whole World Championship full of riders from one country. And this is why Dorna sometimes gets stick about the number of Spaniards involved or Brits when it's World Superbikes. But no, sometimes you can see how people could fall out of love maybe with it occasionally. Do you see what I mean?
Because you have thinking, to understand the workings of it. And you have to appreciate that there are certain things that... It doesn't matter. I have opinions on certain things, but I one thing I don't do is air them on social media.
No, I'd also just add
on my podcast. No, go on.
Sorry. Yeah, no, I was okay. just going to say, without the sponsors though and the money,
sure,
we have no championship anyway, do we?
And that's the bigger picture you need to see.
Exactly.
And yes, it's a difficult time in MotoGP for British riders to make their way forward. Max Cook, we see, as we will get back onto junior superstock at some point.
That was ages ago.
We're now into early Tuesday morning.
That was another podcast, wasn't it?
I think it probably was.
Are you still awake?
You're going to split this down into two at some point. No, it is a difficult thing, and it's... There have been some learning curves, even in BSB going back a few years, where things went a little bit awry and people in high places in BSB got upset with Paddock Chatter, who I was working, we were all working for free. It was, again, through the love of it. That hurt me and the guys that were doing Paddock Chatter with us, and I think there's still a little bit of stigma of that I carry with me at times. But through hard work, through, you know, doing the right things, understanding the right people, it can be done. It can be done. I'm 48 years old. You know, I started a lot later in life than a lot of other people.
He's 62 years old.
But mentioning Paddock Chatter, working with Alana Fellows, with Ollie Rushby, with Matt Dunn, Neil Morrison was on the show a little bit as well. So those guys all went on to bigger, better and greater things. Alana worked in World Superbikes. Ollie's in the paddock now with McCam Yamaha, as working for Yamaha and Potsky Media. And Matt Dunn, as we know, he's out at MotoGP, who's kind of been a leading light in building MotoGP social media with their Instagram stories. He was the first man to introduce emojis to the MotoGP Twitter feed. You know, little things like that, but being introducing it to a younger generation, because he is the younger generation. I was late 30s into my early 40s when I did it, so I had... I had a daughter, a stepson, a wife, a mortgage, a shift working job. So it made things difficult. But now my daughter's older, I'm in a different situation in life. I can now take the opportunities that those guys had.
Yeah.
And although I'm just coming into it a bit later, maybe a little bit of maturity has helped. Maybe I wasn't quite as mature as I should have been within the paddock in the early days, and offending the wrong people. But
now you're offending the right people.
No, I'm offending the right people just by turning up. No, it is straight. It can be done. But again, the world has changed a little bit since then. The Twitter that I had when I had my opportunities of interviewing Scott Redding and getting pieces printed in Motorcycle Racer magazine, courtesy of Ian Wheeler and a lot of the advice that Ian gave in the early days, I wasn't able to carry forward. And that's something I kind of regret, because I just wasn't able to act on it. But then you fast forward a few years and it's like, here I am sat in the middle of the paddock at Alton Park. You know, it's not, I don't think I've made it just because I work for a team or I work for a sponsor.
Certain people have done that before, and it doesn't end well.
It's not a pleasant trait to have.
At the end of the day, you have to be professional, and we're here for a reason. In my case, for example, we have a responsibility to tell the story as best as possible, sure, whether it's in motorcycle news or whether it's in this podcast, which is obviously a slightly different thing, or whether it's chiefly, in my case, in the television commentary. You know, it's our duty to tell the story in the most informing and entertaining way possible, in equal measure.
Indeed.
We're not here for a laugh.
No.
There are laughs along the way, but...
Oh, no, we can have a good time doing it, but there's a job to be done, and I don't think that the people in the paddock aren't going to be around forever. And it for anybody who wants to come in, there are always teams that want social media, the social media, so because it is really important. As much as the platforms aren't quite what they used to be, certainly Instagram's very, very good for race teams, and that I can't think of the word I'm after. Engagement.
Yes.
So on the engagement side of things, it's all very, very important. And there are teams out there who will give opportunities to the younger generation to help with, to build their profile. Because we have like TokTik and Snapchat and things like that. So that was deliberate, by the way. That I have no clue about at all. I am still a Facebook, Instagram and Twitter man, but purely for the work purposes and to keep in touch with my multitude of fans. So
no, I just let him carry on.
Yeah. No, we are fortunate, Greg, and it's just really nice to have a purpose in the paddock now and not to have to, you know, people inviting us in with passes and things like that. I think up to maybe 3 years ago, we were still paying to get in, so it, which I would happily do again if this all fell apart after the first season. I'll still be coming back and I'll just be a paying punter, but I'll still know plenty of people.
Just before we sign off, Dave, I remember the great late, I'm so sad to have to call him that now, Murray Walker.
Indeed.
Always made such an effort to go to race meetings, even when he wasn't working, when he was already a massive celebrity, to meet young drivers, young riders. And that's something you've always done so well here in the BSB paddock over recent years, because you get to know them when they're younger and you already know them by the time they start climbing up the racing ladder, which is obviously great for interviews and opportunities like that. I think it's nice for the riders as well to know some familiar faces. So I'm just keen to know someone who's always surveyed every single class here at BSB, and they've changed as well, the categories, haven't they, over the years? They come and they go, they change names. Who do you reckon are the stars we really need to be watching out for at the moment, just off the top of your head? And I'm sure there'll be somebody we forget. Yeah, I'm going to throw Casey O'Gorman in there after what he did in the British Talent Cup.
Sure.
But who would you think we need to look out for at the moment as stars of the future to go on to, let's say, MotoGP or World Superbike or and British Superbike?
I think at the minute for the British Talent Cup, it's a difficult shout.
They've only had one round.
Exactly. Yeah. for that respect. I need to see that to open up a little bit more.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have enjoyed over the years talking to the younger riders. Back in 2014, talking to Glenn Irwin, just as he'd come out of junior superstock, Keith Farmer the same. So young guys like Jordan Weaving, as we've mentioned previously as well. So yeah, I do like to keep an eye on the younger riders because they are the future of the sport. Without them, we haven't got a sport. Mm-hmm. And if they can go on to bigger and better things, onto the world scene, like the Lowe's boys have done, and Jake Dixon, guys like who was only a few years ago was doing junior superstock against Lee Jackson and guys like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's come from the same stock, if you like, to coin a phrase.
Good, very good, very good.
I'm not quite Matt Burt level of puns, but you know, we and this is still new to me, you know this. And it's unusual to be on the other side of the microphone.
Matt Burt likes his alliterations.
As well. Yes, he does indeed. He is the alliteration abound.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, we like that. But no, the younger classes are so important, both in junior superstock, supersport with the GP2s and national superstock.
Yeah.
The way the guys are coming through that, the Neve twins, a lot of younger riders taking that route through Lewis Rollo, to name but one. We can't name everybody because we'd be here all night, but certainly in junior superstock, the front running guys that we spoke about, Joe Talbot, Zach Corduroy, who's going to be well up for the fight this year after narrowly missing out last year.
He's George, brave, I can tell you that. He is. I must admit, having commentated on those races this weekend, one with James Hayden, one with Tris Finocchiaro, Zach Corduroy, big ambition, I described it as. Cascades. There were some scary moves being pulled, and he had a big crash when he was leading by over 2 seconds on Saturday. So he's obviously maybe just got to calm it down a bit. But as we've said so many times over the years, and so many people say, it's easier to tame a quick rider.
Absolutely.
You than can't to make a slow rider fast, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can say
exactly
it better
that.
Than me.
It's yeah, exactly that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can. You said it.
Yeah.
It's been a long day, hasn't it? It's been a long weekend. It's good.
Dave, thanks a lot. We will sign off there. We'll be back with the podcast next Monday. I would imagine it will be James Whittam and I, but certainly myself and some other celebrity. When I say other celebrity, I don't mean I'm one. I mean James Whittam's one from Donington Park.
I'm cheap and available. I'll see you there.
And World Superbikes. But we'll see you on Friday morning, bright and early, for free practice one on Eurosport and the Eurosport app. We'll see you there.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.